everybody. Welcome to Sonic Talk, episode 485, recording today live on Wednesday, the 15th of March, which I believe is actually the Ides of March. I got that wrong a short time ago. We are experiencing some network traffic issues, so if you're attempting to watch this live and it goes off and on, I do apologise, but it doesn't seem to be us. It seems to be the other end. So we'll record it all locally, and if you can't watch it all, we'll have it up on YouTube shortly. What is this, you are probably asking yourself? Well, we are Sonic Talk. We do a music technology podcast. We're talking about synthesizers, software, recording technology, DJ stuff, controllerism, all kinds of stuff, electronic music, live music, everything to do with all of that kind of business. And we'll be talking for the next hour or so on that very subject with my esteemed colleagues, who I'll introduce you shortly. After I've said thank you very much to our chat room, sonicstate.com/live. If you can also watch this, hopefully, on YouTube Live, or if not on YouTube. And if you like what you see, why not subscribe? We're nearly at our 100K subscribers. We just need a few more thousand to get over the hill. So please do. And I want to say thanks to our sponsors, Isotope. We'll be giving away a copy of Neutron, their mixing plugin, a little bit later on. So let's get into our guests. We'll start off with Mr. Rich Hilton, who's over there in Connecticut. If I keep turning away, it's because I've got my mixer in a new position. So I do apologize. How are you, Rich?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. Rich, I understand you've been working on a whole bunch of... You're setting up a new rig, right?
Yes, I am. I'm playing around with some new toys. And whiling away the hours while it snows. We had a tremendous snowstorm yesterday, and some places are still getting one. And it was quite an adventure clearing it last night, and I've got more to do later today, but we love it.
Oh, gosh, yes, the storm. Isn't that, about this time of year, every year, there's a kind of Stormageddon, isn't there? Is that what it turned into this time?
Yeah, this was a pretty significant storm. For some people, and then for other people, it was like, yeah, what blizzard? but it's funny how people are disappointed. But anyway, we got lots, and it's fun when you have lots for a minute there.
You get that moment, don't you, of that sort of, oh, hunker down, put the fire on, draw the curtains, and see what happens when we wake up in the morning, and it's all 15 foot of snow, and it'll be great for, like you say, the first time, until you have to go to the store or something.
Yeah, or your lovely wife has to go to work.
Yeah, one of those things.
So you try not to let it go until the morning, which we were successful in doing last evening.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. Well, anyway, thanks for joining us, Rich. Hopefully we'll hear a bit more about your new setup as well. We're also going to say hello to Robbie Bronneman, who's there in his studio with what? That's a System 8. You got a System 8. Is that to the right of you there, Robbie?
Yeah, I've got new toys this week. I've got a System 8 and I've got a Control Native Instruments Control S88.
Wow. So, okay. Yeah. So how are you finding the System 8?
I'm really liking it. I haven't had a lot of time to dabble, but I'm enjoying it so far. I wanted a kind of synth that I could take around with me that was just, you know, nice and lightweight and kind of a lot of immediate hands-on stuff. And I like the fact that with the plug-outs it's now got for all the synths, that I could kind of almost just use it like a controller as well if I wanted to, and just use the plug-outs, you know, and control the front end directly from the synth and stack up instances of it as opposed to having to commit it to audio. So I just thought, yeah, it's quite a good time to give it a go. So, yeah, I'm liking it.
And are you fine? Because I was kind of surprised in the review, which is a bit unfair, but does it feel like a sort of complete instrument thing? Do you feel like you can connect with it in some sort of way?
I do. I think what you said about the... what you said about it being just a capable synth as a System 8 in its own right, I think is pretty right, really. I mean, there's something to be said about, obviously, the original interfaces of things like a Jupiter and a Juno, when that's all you've got on the interface is the sliders and knobs that are there for that instrument. It's a little bit confusing working with them on the System 8 because, obviously, I know the others black out and you're left with the ones that you use. But it's ergonomically not laid out in the same kind of way, so it's a little bit of a head mess up.
Yeah.
But I'm really liking it, and I just wanted something new just to kind of throw in the mix for the next few projects. So I thought I'd kind of give it a go. I'm not a snob with the old analog or whatever. I'm just whatever's great and works for a project. So yeah.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I think that's a very good sentiment to have. I suppose we should start, because I don't think either of you were on last week when we talked about, obviously, there was the news of the new Behringer Mini concept clone. And since then, there's been news of the intent or the desire to make a 2600 and an Oscar, which are both sort of fairly heavyweights. I mean, I wonder, honestly, it's one of the most commented on news items we've had for months. I think there's lots and lots of comments on it. And it's quite an interesting, throws up a lot of interesting kind of points of view. And there seems to be a split into two camps. You know, one is, as I think I said before, is, yeah, great, I'll have one. I hope it sounds anything, you know, if it sounds anything like that, then I'm sure it'll be affordable. Okay, you know, maybe it won't be built to mil spec, but at the price, I'm prepared to take that chance. And there are other people who are all uppity and outraged by it. I wonder what your takes are on that subject. I'll start with you, Robbie, because you've just bought a new synth.
My take on it is this, is that as long as morally that they're not doing anything that's, you know, wrong in terms of they're obviously they have to be able to legally do these things, just like I guess Korg was able to do the art that they've done. I think good on them, because there is such a terrible snobbery in synth world, in analog synth world, as there is in guitar world and all these things at the high end, where people, you know, people just go on and on about the minutiae of this not being quite the same as that and all this kind of thing. And it really just annoys me, because I know people who make amazing music with a crappy PC laptop, you know, and they make far better music than lots of people who've got thousands of analog synths, you know, the best synths in the world. So I think if it makes analog synths accessible to a much bigger range of people, I don't think it's going to have any bearing on people who want to buy high-end instruments. You know, it hasn't affected guitars, and there's cheap guitars out there or whatever, or knockoff Strats. People still want to buy real Strats, and they still want to buy all those things. So I think if these synths only come 80 or 90% to sounding like the original for a fraction of the price, I think that's still a pretty good deal. No reference point for the original anyway.
Yeah, exactly. What are you going to compare it to, unless you already own one or have used one extensively, I suppose. I know, Rich, just a quick, if you wouldn't mind.
Not at all. What he said, I mean, Robbie basically said it all. If there's nothing wrong with having more ARP 2600s in the world, and if it were to behave substantially like the original, as Korg's Odyssey appears to do, then so much the better.
Yeah.
So if they get it right, that would be really nice. And if they get it wrong, I think people will still probably like some of that.
Exactly. I suppose it's just going to be down to whether or not. And it's also worth mentioning, I think we mentioned it last time, because we did talk about quite a lot about the Mini clone last week. These are all kind of, that there is this sort of caveat which people haven't sort of spotted, which is if people show enough interest, then we'll go forward. We're looking at it, and if it's worth it, we'll do it. So if enough of you say, yeah, we'll buy one, or yeah, we're interested, or then we'll go ahead. So it's not even to the point where it's been.
Is it that?
Sorry.
I thought Gaz told me yesterday that the D one has already gone on sale in some store, online stores.
Well, maybe that's part of the checking out process. I'm not sure that's. I don't know if that. I don't really think that would be right. I mean, I know that some stores will do that because, you know, sales are sales. I would be wary of that kind of information, because I don't think there's anything in the world just yet. But maybe I'm wrong. You know, I mean, I don't have any inside information, but I'd be surprised. But yeah, that does sound dubious, I think. We'll see.
Well, concert promoters do it.
Yeah.
And it does seem like there is a sort of a seed funding aspect to the technology business that I'm noticing across the last 6 months, which begins to blur the line between what is actually a Kickstarter project and what is a major corporate announcement. And so whereas the idea of marketing things with a picture prior to actually having one isn't new, it seems to have gone tilted a little further into the Kickstarter direction of major corporations announcing products that they really haven't even mocked up yet.
Well, I mean, I guess we couldn't really level that at Behringer because they're not the ones who saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not saying, and I'm not pointing fingers at anybody in particular, but
sure.
This is all I've observed all of this across the length of time. And these days, if they're basically running an idea up a flagpole to see who salutes, they're not the first to do that either. But if people are taking orders for them on the promise that they might get made.
Yeah, that's not quite the same as Kickstarter, is it? That's a slightly different, because you know what you're getting into with something like that, which is a tried and tested crowdfunding sort of scenario. This isn't the same thing, but yeah. It's not. It wouldn't necessarily.
I mean, I guess it's pretty good business savvy, really, because a company like Behringer, if they can work out the kind of interest and the amount of pre-sales that big music chains are going to buy, then they can work out what kind of cost they can really make these instruments for. And I guess the more interest up front, the lower they can offer these instruments, you know, from the outset if their volume in terms of buying components is so great.
Yeah.
So I guess they're in a unique position as a very big company to be able to do that, which is, I guess, is good for the consumer.
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing to say. I don't want to dwell too long on it because we spent quite a lot on it last week, and it is a very interesting topic, and who knows where it will end. So let's get into something that actually exists, shall we? This is Tim Exile's new Reactor 6 instrument, SLU, Shed Load of Oscillators, a swarm-based synthesizer. And in every Tim Exile inimitable way, it has its own thing going on there. I'm liking the look of that. I don't have Reactor. I think I have got Reactor. This is the news. This is, I mean, Tim's done a number of things. I think, isn't it the finger, the mouth? There's a whole bunch that he builds. I mean, I wonder, this guy must be very kind of, I wonder if he's creative sort of electronically or creative synthesis wise, because he's obviously a very creative bloke. So this is something that is really kind of, I like the sound of this. This is, I think, no, let's see if I'm getting this right. It's up to 48 parametric voices with multi-shape oscillator, FM, multi-mode filter and tempo sync parametric LFO. And this is obviously all built in Reactor 6.1. You do need the full version for this. Robbie, I'll come to Rich first because I'm not getting your video at the moment.
Yeah, I just saw that's disappeared. Do you want me to?
Yeah, if you could just switch the video on and off again and see if it comes up while I talk to Rich.
Okay. Well,
when 47 oscillators just won't do. I mean, first of all, let's talk about the product name because that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Shitload of oscillators. Come on.
Shed load of oscillators.
Oh, is that what he said?
Yeah, shed is a different term. It's something that's used when you have shed loads. Shed loads are things that, you know, large amounts of stuff. It's not.
Well,
not
wash my mouth out with soap.
I don't know where you got that idea from, Rich. I don't know how you could even think such a thing.
He does a lot of creative stuff, and this is something that's very creative, and it does sound great. And for anybody who thinks they might need to sound like this, I can't imagine a finer device than this to create that. And I'll stand in line waiting to be one of those guys because it really is that good, but I'm not right this second one of those guys.
Yeah,
I've bought a lot of his stuff, but I'm not currently yet motivated to buy this one as much as it sounds great, looks great, works great, looks like it's fun to use, does everything he probably set out to have it do, and he's a brilliant cat. I just don't have a use for it. It'll sit in my folder waving at me. Remember this? Remember you actually spent money, you know, like that one.
Yeah, that way. I've got you. It doesn't look like we got Robbie's video back, but we'll talk to him anyway.
Hello, Mike. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine. So what do you think about a shed? Yeah. I should just say shed load of oscillators then.
Well, I've always been a massive fan of Tim's right from I saw him performing quite early on with Imogen Heap, and he toured with her for a while. And I actually met him actually at one of Imogen's gigs I went to in Bristol. He's an amazing guy, because he is a musician, but he's one of those incredible nerdy brains who like kind of wants to make all sorts of mental things work together that shouldn't work together. So I've seen him doing stuff with, like, you know, computer games, joysticks, manipulating his voice live and all that. And he does these amazing shows with all this looping and real-time manipulation. He's super clever. But, I'm really interested in this. I love any tools like this. I'm on a horrible precipice, because I've been on, what is it, Mavericks on my Mac Pro. And it's been bomb-proof for so long. Everything's been working, and I've had all these projects that were all still floating in, sort of not quite done. And then I went to get the upgrade for Logic a few weeks ago, and it says your system is not compatible. And I'm like, I've got to change. So I don't know what operating system I should go to. I'm in a bit of a quandary. And then I've got Complete 11 sitting here, which I've been holding off putting in until I put in a new operating system. So I haven't had Reactor 6. So I've got all those of Reactor 6 to delve into. So, yeah, so this now, it's another thing that makes me go, right, I really want to get Reactor 6 in the system.
It's funny, it goes like that, doesn't it? There's this point where you need to upgrade your machine, which is one thing I've done with the MacBook Pro, and it won't run anything less than, you know, whatever the latest thing is. Or there's this sort of building pressure of stuff that you'd quite like. You have to get to that critical mass before you do upgrade, and I guess this is one of those things. But it sounds like, you know, it's just, is it yet another reason then? Yeah,
it's I definitely need to do it. It's just I like to do these things properly, so I like to do a proper clean install, and I don't like to put operating systems on top of operating systems. So it's basically like I'm a very organized person. I have all my installers cataloged on a hard drive and serial numbers and all this stuff, so I have everything ready to go in a very systematic way, but it will probably, I'm guessing, take me a good couple of days to do it. So and nobody's been quite able to tell me what they reckon is the most reliable operating system to go to at this time, so I'm a little bit on the fence, but I do want to do it. So anyone got any ideas, let me know which one to go to.
Very well. Okay. I should like to point out, I did mention at the end of last week's show, I was having this real trouble. I had a pair of USB external drives, and I couldn't get my USB-C to USB 3 hub to power more than one at a time. And I just thought, this is ridiculous. I can't copy data between drives on my Mac. This is ludicrous. And a very kind chap in the comments of last week's show called Niall Cameron, he said, Nick, I'm not sure if this would make any difference, but since you can charge the MacBook from any of the USB-C ports, does it make a difference if you move the charging cable to the one next to to where the port is? Just a thought. And I thought, oh, that's got to be worth a try, because I had the USB on one side and the power on the other, and I moved the USB to the power to the set, and hey presto, it worked. So I'd just like to say thank you, Niall. That's one of the boxes ticked, and now I can actually copy between drives and do all of those things. So that's a good thing. It's not really an OS based thing, but a hardware based thing. We should say that the Shed Load of Oscillators, you can get it from timexile.com, and it's, I think it's £39, $48, £45. So you can get it there, but you do need, rather sadly, it doesn't work on Reactor Player, it only works on the full Reactor 6.1.1, which at current price is around about 170 quid, so I'm guessing about $200, which is considerably cheaper than it used to be. So, you know, if you're thinking of it, this might be yet another thing that tips you over the edge into Reactor world. I mean, I don't have enough time in my life to do that. But, I mean, imagine if you're as creative a guy as Tim is, then you might be chomping at the bit to start building your own stuff, in which case it might be, you know, just the ticket. So timexile.com is where you need to go for your Tim Exile needs. Right. And the other thing I thought of, what would happen if you could put it on? Well, what would be really cool, this is something that came up, is what happens if they can figure out a way to port a Reactor kind of player onto Pi? Because have you seen this thing?
We truly believe that it's the only Raspberry Pi head you will ever need for your audio project. PiSound comes with a stereo input and output with gain and volume controls, classic MIDI in and out ports with activity LEDs, a user customizable button, and additional software that will help you bring your ideas to life in no time. Whether it's developing your recording studio, creating an internet radio station, network-enabled audio player, or even making your own instrument.
This is an interesting idea. So this is the concept of it's a board that sits on top of a Raspberry Pi, which is like a $25 microcomputer, and it gives you MIDI I/O and audio I/O for, I think it's about $79. And they've raised $9,000 so far on their Indiegogo thing. It's about $90. So it's actually the price of three pies, but it kind of, we've talked about this idea as this sort of single purpose thing. I just like the idea of you could run some of Tim Exile's synths or anybody else's, you know, maybe it's time for them to start thinking about moving these into these kind of worlds, these single purpose machines. I know Robbie does that. Oh, Robbie's gone. He's gone. Let's just see what Rich thinks about it then.
Well, it's oh, there's Robbie.
Yeah. He's back now.
I rebooted. I rebooted.
It's Sky. Sort of an unproven concept to me. I know that the teenage engineering guys have sold products that kind of look like circuit boards with buttons on them. And I'm not close enough to the community of people who are likely their customers to be able to say to what extent those things are successful.
I suppose so. It'd be cool, though, it would seem to make sense that if somebody like NI could say, we're doing a Linux port or we're going to put this up on Linux, then you could start putting these things. You know, you could buy the Tim Exile thing, and if there was some sort of version of Reactor that ran on a Linux core, and then you could bung it onto your Pi, that would be pretty awesome. I don't know. What do you think, Robbie? Do you like the idea of a little box that just has Tim Exiles on it, or would you rather keep it all inside the same box?
I've kind of, the Virgo in me, what likes just keeping things nice and compartmentalized. And I know Gaz is the one for, like, you ever go around to Gaz's house, he's got about a billion little tiny little gizmos and things all over the shop, like a mad laboratory. I think my days of that have gone. I like a concise amount of things around me. Not too many little bits and bobs. So I can see like Rich says, there's a real community of people who like that. And I love going on YouTube and stuff and seeing people who've harnessed together an obscene amount of little gizmos to do, you know, to do all sorts of crazy fridge malfunctioning kind of sounds. And all you know, I enjoy all that. But
not yet. Okay.
Not.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. Well, let's just have a word from our sponsors, because it's about that time that we say hello to Isotope. Obviously, this is Isotope Neutron. This is the mix assistant and mix processing plugin that really, it's like a kind of new way of, at least even at the most basic level, just visualizing your mix, seeing where the frequency clashes are, and also having it suggest what sort of processing you might want to put on, you know, your bass track or your bass synth track or your vocal track, and using those as a starting point. The industry first masking meter is the thing that shows you these kind of frequency conflicts, and it's really a very powerful, it's like having another set of monitors, but you're visually monitored. And from what I've heard and experienced, it definitely makes the mix process a lot more, it's like having another tool, you know, another set of speakers. We often go into the car and listen to it, we can just take a look, see, and even things that you can't hear, you can see there's a conflict, you can sort it out, and then suddenly the mix will just open up and maybe work better. So we'd like you to draw your attention to this, and maybe you want to go and check out the demo. Go to isotope.com/neutron and download the demo. And we've also got a competition which I will have details coming up. We want to say thank you very much to Isotope for sponsoring the show. So let's get back into the competition. Last week we ran a competition for Neutron, and we have a winner, and it's a great win, actually, because this time what's actually happened is we have somebody called, and now I'm not going to pronounce this right correctly, Satawarzewski, I knew I wouldn't do it, at Satawarzewski, I think is how you pronounce it, is the Twitter handle, and he just said, or she said, Expert Audio Neutron at Sonic State at Isotope Inc., which was the competition. Thanks for picking me. And it, as it turns out, the random number generator did pick them. So if you want to get in touch, Isotope will be able to drop a copy of Neutron into your account and you'll have a fully working copy. And we've got another competition this week. So if we just go to this screen here, you'll be able to see what we're looking for is the hashtag Fix Your Mix and the hashtag Neutron. And that's a Twitter competition. The hashtag Fix Your Mix, the hashtag Neutron, to at Sonic State and at Isotope Inc. And you enter that and we'll be able to pick you up from the Twitter feed and drive you into the competition and pick a winner from next week. So once again, we thank Isotope for their continued sponsorship of the show. So guys, we're on to, let me see, what video is this one? This is this one. Check this out.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Townsend Labs Inc. Sphere L22 microphone, which is a kind of modeling microphone, but it's got a pair of large diaphragm
Sphere diaphragms. Sphere is microphone technology that allows the 3D off-axis response modeling of vintage microphones, as well as changing the polar patterns and other characteristics like proximity effect even after the recording's done. A lot of post production choices and something that can get a lot of different sounds from just one package.
We focus on modeling large diaphragm condensers because those are the most sought after, desired microphones.
Okay, we're recording.
Right, I won't play the whole ad, but this has been getting a lot of attention. Every time I was at NAMM and several people came up to me and said, have you checked this out? It's really kind of blowing up. People are really interested. And I've just sort of come to take a look at it now. We may have mentioned it a long time back when it was at the R&D phase. I don't remember now, but I was just looking. They did a Kickstarter because they had it all tooled up and ready. And they said, well, it was Indiegogo actually. And they said, well, what we want to do now is gauge the level of interest so we know how big a production run. And they raised $350,000, which is 789% of their goal. So obviously there is a great deal of interest to this. Now, I am not a studio recording microphone person, but essentially two large diaphragms. The signal is split into two signals. You record both of them. It means that you can use a plugin to change the polar response and process the mic types and the mic modeling. And the reason, and because you're using two diaphragms, lots of mic modelers just tend to work on axis, but this also picks up the off axis pattern and allows you to modify all of that. And a lot from what I've heard, I mean, there was a review on Pro Tools Expert, and what I was hearing, you know, the U47 model was sounding really nice, and the C12 model sounded really nice as well. But it seems like if you're quite often, you know, maybe recording a vocal or whatever, and you want that level of change, this could be something very interesting. Rich, you're looking slightly skeptical. I don't know whether or not you've heard or tried or had any reports of this thing, because I don't think it's fully out in the world yet. There are a few models out there, but not lots. Is this the sort of thing that you would dig in your set?
Absolutely, and I'm not the least bit skeptical, so I'm
good.
If I look that way, I apologize. I've been asking since 1982 why an MS setup involves a figure of eight rather than a pair of cardioids, and now I could have my way with this thing easily. And actually, after the fact, apparently you can do things in software after the fact to a signal recorded on one of the two sides of the microphone that are fairly unique and revolutionary as well. But it is a very, very interesting product, and it's actually one of two modeling microphone products that's appeared first as sort of discussion and vapor, and then subsequently as hardware, which is the other of which is Steven Slate's product, which doesn't do the dual condenser head thing. It does a lot. It models a lot of microphones that exist. This one has a whole bunch of other tricks, both in hardware and in software. I haven't heard it. I'd love to hear it. And I think it's a really fascinating and cool product.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess in terms of, I mean, is this the sort of thing that you might want? I mean, I'm guessing, you know, you've probably got access to some beautiful mics. Is this sort of the sort of thing that if you could only take one, and obviously it wasn't a 1950s U47 or whatever, you might take something like this, because then you'd have the ability to make those choices sort of, you know, if you were going to a remote location and doing a recording and couldn't have
Absolutely.
Access.
Absolutely. Traveling with rare and vintage stuff is highly overrated, in my opinion. I'm serious. And because the risks outweigh the benefits so enormously as compared to... Now, there are exceptions. For example, my buddy Nile Rodgers and his guitar. He wants to play that guitar. He's been playing that guitar since he was a kid. That's his guitar. People have tried and tried and tried and tried. Fender did finally get very close. And that's our backup. But he still wants to play that guitar. And so he assumes the risk with the, you know, for the benefit. But 99% of the time, it's a highly overrated pursuit.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. Robbie, I'm guessing this might be something that would appeal to you as well, right?
The bizarre thing was, is literally this morning, I downloaded the latest UAD software because I was very excited last night to discover that the Otto Biscuit, which is one of my favorite devices, became available on the UAD platform. So I excitedly downloaded the new UAD software this morning, and then this plugin popped up, and I was like, what the heck is this plugin? Because it was the plugin to go with the mic.
Yeah, I would like to say it runs on other platforms. It's not just a UAD thing, is it?
But, yeah. it was just part of the new update. And I was just like, what is this? I don't know what this is. I don't understand how you'd use it because it seems to be its twin to something else. And then it came up with this window saying you have to use it with the mic. And then I got the email from you about this. So I'm really interested in this because like Rich says, when I go off and do remote recording, you know, mobile recording with somebody, the ability to... You know, you can take a nice large diaphragm condenser mic or whatever that you think's great, and some, you know, 9 times out of 10 is probably great, but sometimes a mic just doesn't suit a person, and for whatever reason or a job, and it just isn't the best thing. And the ability to have, I've wanted some of this for like this for ages, and I have looked at the Slate thing.
Yeah, that's supposed to be pretty good too, but it doesn't do the off-axis modeling, I think.
Yeah, and the stereo recording and everything. This just seems like. You might be able to confidently take this away with like your, in my case, like my UAD Apollo Twin, you know, and whatever else, and my Mac Pro, and my two little portable monitors and all that. And like, you know, you could be pretty set up to cover most jobs. And yeah, so I'm immediately really interested. In fact, so interested, I was just before the show looking to see where I could buy one. But it says on the Indiegogo that it's available. They're available directly from the Indiegogo. You can still buy them from the, you know, the campaign.
Oh, okay.
And it says available January 2017.
Oh right. So I mean, I think they're shipping sort of now-ish for sure. So,
yeah, I guess they must be shipping because otherwise there'd be no point in the plug-in being available as part of the UAD thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's $1,500.
Yeah, plug. I think that's the Indiegogo price. I think $17.99 if you were to buy it regularly.
I'm really interested in this. I'm after the show. I'm going to be getting straight onto the internet to do a bit of scouting about it.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Rich, am I right in thinking this can be used as a stereo mic as well?
Yeah,
I believe so. And I believe that it's got a whole bunch of software tricks that will take. Something that's recorded on one side of the microphone saying cardioid and make you can actually enhance the polar pattern in software after you've recorded something, for example, they say.
Now, that's intriguing.
I haven't actually used it, and it's possible that I misconstrued that part of it, but this was because it was months ago that our friends over at, you know, all your favorite software expert.com, hipped me to this, and I've been looking at it some months ago, so it's been a while. But I think I recall the software tricks applying to any particular recording format you did. So I don't know about stereo, to be answering.
Okay. All right. But it looks like, I mean, an interesting concept in kind of my, because I know that there was a UAD plugin I did recently. I think it was the Ocean Way, where you could apply microphones to specific sources, and I really like the sound of the C12, but again, that was pure DSP, and there was no kind of actual mic. The mic was all being modeled after the effect, so you could make it sound like that, and it sounded pretty good. But it's a different thing. Yeah, so it's available on UAD platform and on. I guess it must be free because if you buy the mic, then
yeah, it says the mic. It says the mic. I looked at it. It's the mic comes with. All the plugins, with all the plugin derivatives for all the platforms, yeah.
Okay, that sounds good. So UAD says here, actually, UAD, VST, AU, AAX, native. So it gives you all of those. And I think that sounds like a cool idea. And I'm sure if you, I don't really have a need for that kind of stuff myself, but I think if I was recording a lot of things, it might, you know, you could imagine a pair of those and you'd be pretty much set. You know, if all you ever needed to do was record a couple of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's all I need to record. So.
Okay, right. Well, we'll move on to, let's see what's, we did the clones thing. Did you see this? That Adam's new, that's not Adam speakers. That's this, isn't it? That's not it either. Hold on, I've got it somewhere. Hold on. Here we are. Yeah, this is the new Adam DSP equipped monitors, which were... here we go.
Hello there, how you doing?
So these are the S-Series monitors.
Really good. We're over at Dance Fair. Let's introduce you to the new S-Series monitors.
I want to say thanks to Champ for filming this. He was based in Utrecht.
S3V. And over here we have the S2V, so we've only got two models at the actual dance fair there today. A lot of things have changed for us guys. We've done a lot of market research to find out what the Adam users want and to find out what the non-Adam users want. And we've come up with two different conclusions. Some of you want neutral, some of you want flat, and the others guys want a nice big voicey sound. So we've added DSP to our monitors.
Again, I won't play the whole thing.
Well, let's get the best of both worlds.
Oh, maybe I will. No, I'm not. Oh, actually, hold on. That's because it's the wrong button. I'm playing that video live. So these are the new Adam DSPs. I know a lot of people swear by Adams. And I think Dave Spears has got a pair of Adams in his studio. I don't know. Are you guys, either of you, familiar with the Adam studio monitors?
We've got some downstairs in Simon's studio. We've got some S8s, I think they are, the ones with the ribbon tweeters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think monitors are one of those things, you know. Once you have monitors that you know and love,
you don't go anywhere else. Yeah,
you just don't even take an interest. I mean, I had DynAudio BM6As for my first proper monitors, and I loved them. And then I went onto my DynAudio Air system, and I just don't think I'll ever get anything else because I know them, I love them, everything I do sounds right on them. And it's just like, it's that whole thing of like having a great guitar, like you said, like Niall has his guitar or whatever. Once it's such a part of what you're, it's kind of like almost a part of your body when you're a musician or a producer. I don't know people who want to keep upgrading their monitors all the time. But yeah, I mean, I guess the world always needs new monitors for new buyers and people, all that kind of thing. But I don't even keep my eye on the ball of what's going on. The only ones I hanker for, and that's because I just see them in lots of studios of people I really respect, are those barefoot ones. The big barefoots with the speakers on the side. I know Ty's got a pair. And I think perhaps one day if I had a bigger place, I might have something like that just as an alternative. But yeah,
What do you think about the concept of this sort of the embedded DSP concept where you can change the character of the speaker? So, I mean, let's assume in one mode they are perfect for XLR. Because quite often when you're in the studio, you might have one set of monitors that you'd use for vibing, you know, like when you're making beats or coming up with sort of sketches, and another set that you would use for the mix because they shouldn't be kind of big and bold and sort of, or necessarily, you know, you might have two different sets. So, I mean, do you think there's a room for this? I mean, is that something that you've experimented, or would you rather keep them on separate monitors?
Well, to be honest with you, my DynAudio Air correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they were the first speaker system that had embedded DSP. They're a digital system. So I can change the EQ with a full, you know, very comprehensive EQ curve for each of the speakers in the 5.1, and I can change the cutoff point to the sub and have it on memories on the little controller and all that stuff. So,
Do you do that?
When I do surround, I have a setup. I have two setups. When I put it in surround mode, I have a setup where all the crossover point for the bass goes right down into the sub, so that all the speakers end up being like little home theater, satellite speakers. So right. I can hear what the mix will be like, how it will translate in that situation. And then I have another setup where I have the most full range and the bass if I want to hear like for LFE effects. And then I have a stereo setup, and that's all I use it for. I just have three setups. They all work, and that's, you know, it's great. But I mean, it's certainly been useful in rooms. In my last place, there was a little bit of a weird sound in one corner at the back, and I was able to kind of have that speaker adjusted so it kind of fitted in with the rest of the system. So from that point of view, great. I mean, I tend to think that it's my way of looking at it is I have the Dyn Audios. I have a little tiny Boss SoundLink 2 that sits in front of me, and I have a pair of those Avantone shit boxes, you know, like you know, active versions of Auratones.
Right.
And I can, you know, I reference on all three. But I guess if you haven't got room for more than one set of speakers, then that's a nice and efficient way of doing it.
Interesting. I don't know. What do you think about this, Rich? I mean, in terms of the concept of DSP speakers that you can flip and adjust. I mean, I suppose for many people, it's not just about the sound of them. It's about where the sound is coming from. So you might want big wides and then narrow stereo field and that sort of thing, which you probably, I don't know if you can do that in DSP only.
To your question about what do I think about having DSP and speakers, it's sort of moot because almost all of these self-amplified monitors have some form of DSP at the front end that allows you to do something between the input and the actual driver of the speaker. The ones that are sitting in front of me right now, as a matter of fact, which are Presonus Scepter 8s, which are coaxially mounted speakers that somebody basically sent me and said, listen to these. And I hadn't been looking for a pair of speakers, and I liked them, so I kept them. As Robbie is, I'm a big lover of Dyn Audio stuff. And at Niles, we have Dyn Audio, and been using their stuff for years, both, and then later on got into the powered stuff. I haven't heard the Air series, but the what is it, BM or DM series that they had previous to that was fantastic. And I put those into some studio designs that I did. I entered the whole thing thinking, and I still do on some level, that this is enough rope with which to hang one's self. And for most people, it probably isn't necessarily... It's not going to go away, so it's almost useless to complain about it. But you can actually so drastically affect the sound of the company's product that you have quite a bit of latitude to make it sound like garbage. But that said, I once attended a demo by the company Genelec about 5 years ago where they were premiering a surround rig they had with DSP and an analysis tool. And there was an analysis microphone they placed. This was an unremarkable sounding room. It sounded like it didn't sound good at all. And they put this analysis mic up and ran their surround sound analysis and then played that same music they had just played. And it was wondrous what it had done. All on its own, without anybody having to adjust anything. Just let it run through its paces in this crappy sounding room. And what came out afterwards was stunning. At that moment, I became a believer.
Right. Okay. I get you.
But I think doing that cheaply or half-assed, in other words, using not the right calibration microphone or not matching the calibration microphone to the company that's doing the analysis or any, there's a thousand ways to do this in a sort of hackneyed version that I would be very, very skeptical of. But what I heard that night was amazing.
Yeah, but I guess, I mean, that the kind of complete system. I mean, Robbie, does the Dyn Audio come with its own analysis thing or do you have to get someone in to tune it?
No, it doesn't have auto analysis. But, you know, I'm reminded of this story that I was told by a friend of mine once who he did some mixes in a very posh studio, which will remain nameless. And they did two mixes. It cost them a lot of money. And when they took them out to listen to them, they sounded absolutely shocking. And they couldn't work out what was going on. And basically what happened was there were these graphics in a cupboard in the studio across the main monitors, the big wall-mounted monitors, and a cleaner lady had come in and dusted and basically leveled off these graphics in the cupboard and totally ruined all the settings. And they fixed their tracks with these monitors. Totally wrong. And basically compensated for all the inadequacies. There's been all those tools, haven't there? Like for putting a plug in, you put across your mic and stuff, and then you have a little analysis mic. And I'm always just have that ringing in the back of my mind, that story. But I know, obviously, with the speaker system, it's very different. I guess, like Rich said, all these kind of tools which allow you to do, in you know, minute little changes and subtle changes and big changes. They're only as good as the ears of the people using them. So for some people, I think that's going to be a real blessing and a real bonus to how they work. To others, it may be fraught with pitfalls and mixes that come back sounding shocking elsewhere. Who knows?
That's a very valid point. Yeah. Oh, that's a painful one. Anyway, these are there's a series because they've got some of them are horizontal mount, some of them vertical mount, so you can choose however you want it to be. Where my headphones have just there we go, unplugged themselves. So actually, before we go, Rich, I wanted to talk to you because you've been working on a setup, because I know you've been talking a while about doing a live rig, and that's something you've been working on, and we managed to get we've got your screen and we've got your face and your audio.
My unremarkable screen, yes.
So what exactly have you been doing? What are you working on at the moment in terms of a new setup then?
Well, I am extraordinarily inspired by this Rolly Seaboard keyboard. In fact, calling it a keyboard doesn't do it justice, which is why they invented that word, I'm sure. But I haven't been inspired to practice an instrument this hard in a long time. And I really want to find a voice on it, and I want to find a venue for it. And I don't necessarily want that to be determined by some existing concept. Although I'm sure if it's based in my playing, it'll be kind of pseudo semi jazzy. But I just needed to have, I haven't actually had a personal rig on which to actually go out and play for people in decades. I know that sounds crazy, but it's true. I mean, all of my playing has been surrounding being in Chic or being around Nile or being in studios here and there and everywhere else. And I just haven't actually needed a personal rig in decades. And this thing right here has inspired me to create a rig to play through. And being the person I am and the age I'm at and all that, their considerations are many, including size and weight. Big consideration. How much of this crap do I actually want to have to move on any given night? Yeah. And as such, my MacBook Pro is my sound source. And I'm just diving in now.
So So you're using main stage. So what does it consist of at the moment? You've got the Seaboard, you've got the MacBook Pro, you've got, what else are you running?
I've got Keith McMillan's K-Mix as my sort of between the computer and speakers and powered speakers loaded with DSP situation. I got a couple of speakers to put up on poles. And I've got an Akai 88-note controller down here that I'll do your more traditional piano style playing.
Nice. And you're using GarageBand, main stage to pull it all together. Is that
at the moment? I mean, this rig as it's been in my mind now for months, and I've been planning and buying gear and this and that. And now it's down to making it real. And the first thing that I was recommended to was main stage or the Apple World, because capturing the Rolly is a pretty involved process, and for some kinds of software, you have to create a ton of input tracks because it transmits on pretty many of or all of the 16 MIDI channels at the same time, depending on the amount of polyphony you want. But generally speaking, it uses up a whole bunch of MIDI bandwidth, and in order to do that effectively, in some softwares, you would have to enable 16 MIDI channels into record to record a single melodic line off of this instrument. And then in other software, you can create multiple, because just running an Omni apparently won't do, but Apple's software, including MainStage and Logic, allow you to enable tracks that will, on a single track, record all of those channels simultaneously. And so It's purported to be easy to use, easier than the others that would require.
So how have you got it set up in main stage then? How are you routing it in main stage? Because if you've got the main stage screen here, because I imagine that's quite challenging. Are you having to...
No, it's not actually challenging at all once you get to know it. I actually spent 12 hours of fretting about why it wasn't working out the way I expected, and I did a little bit. It's funny how my research is based in old school thinking. So like I go to the library and read about every single piece of software I'm using, and I figure that that's going to bring me to some point of enlightenment. But what in fact brought me to some point of enlightenment was getting online and typing, how do you do this? And like 100 guys have already done this before, and then you just watch what one of them did and you go, oh, I see, that's what I didn't do. And I go in and I do what the guy did, and bingo, it all works. So you define, in the case of my simple little rig, and by the way, I know Robbie puts together rigs that are 100 times more complicated than this for a single show. So this is like just elementary stuff, but it's me diving in. So here you've got two keyboards on the screen, the top one representing that one, and you can see it glowing green as I play it, and the bottom one representing this Akai weighted note keyboard on the bottom. And basically, you define the keyboards within the software so it recognizes them as unique and distinctive. And you enable an instrument track, and you can, when I enable an instrument track, like take this one, which is, this is the one which is being played from the Roley, and it's a synthesizer by F Expansion called Strobe 2 that they've adapted.
All right, so it's MPE enabled already, right?
Yes, it is. And I'm running it from within Blue Cat's patchwork, which I quite like a lot. And on the back end of it is, I'm going to sound like an ad now, Native Instruments Delay. And our pal, Michael Cairns's beautiful new reverb behind all
the
R4,
right? Okay.
And I like the patchwork software a lot for hosting self-contained things that you can then bring in and out of any software you're running it under. So in this case, I'm running Blue Cat Audio as my host for the Roley stuff, and I'm running Contact on the other. With my pal Thomas Garby's new Fender Rhodes patch, which I really think very highly of.
Oh, nice.
He's really nailed this, and he's got a ton of really great presets, and I'm using a classic stage, preset number one, and I love it. It's just, he's got ones that are more tinkly and do more stuff and have more vibrato panning, and he's got the whole gamut of stuff you might ever want to do with the Fender Rhodes in this thing. But the quality of Thomas's work, his samples in general over the years have always been spectacular, and this is no exception. And his stuff is impeccable, and I really like playing it. It's always fun to play. So that's what I have open, you know, that's the early, this has just gone up. I've just like kind of wiped the deck and set all this up yesterday, and now I'm like beginning to work on bringing it into some form that I can take into a room and use.
Right. Okay. I got it. So, Robbie, are you using main stage at all live? Because I know you have like Ableton rigs. Are you using main stage in your live rigs now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've been using it for about 6 years with Howard. So, yeah, it's a marvel. It's great. We resampled all the. We resampled all the original synths and all that stuff, and we run a couple of virtual instruments to keep it simple. We don't try and stack it up with masses of stuff. Just, you know, the workhorse stuff. All our samples are all our custom samples are done in the EXS24, and then we've got a contact for a CP70. So how I can do is No One Is to Blame classics, and we've got FM8, so we can get some of those classic DX sounds, and we've got the Juno 62 for the Juno 60 and the Jupiter 8 from the from Arturia and Ivory, and that's it. And we do everything and that, and yeah, it's, in fact, I'm just this next month building brand new rigs for our summer tour, because we're expanding the band. We've got two drummers, we've got a drummer and a stand-up electronic percussionist, and we've got a guitarist coming. So Howard and I are also getting rebuilt rigs and stuff. So Yeah, so but the premise is still exactly the same. You know, his rig is a main stage rig from a laptop, and I can also control his main stage rig from a keyboard over in my rig. So, you know, all the keyboards just come out of one computer and it just works.
Because I remember when I first started looking into main stage, because when I was doing the production design for Golf Wrap stuff, it wasn't quite there yet. And so we were ended up using S5000s, you know, because that was just tried and tested hardware. But actually, they fell away. And now main stage seems to, there seemed to have been a point where Apple sat down with a bunch of people who were using these in the field and fixed a load of stuff and made it kind of just work.
Well, it's Gerhard, isn't it? Gerhard, who used to be, who owned Logic, he now is in LA, and he works for Apple, and his primary baby, all he works on is main stage, and you know, making it as good as it can be for touring, because it's pretty much everybody out there on big tours are using main stage, and I've got friends, and all they specialize in doing is, and big artist comes to them and says, here's our new album. Here's the multi-tracks. Come back in a month's time with two keyboard rigs set up, with all the sounds mapped. You tell the keyboard players they're playing this sound here, this sound here, this sound here. And it just, you know, and it just works, main stage. As long as you've got properly built rigs and you've got redundancy built in, you know, and it's great, yeah.
What do you do with redundancy then? Are you kind of just have two rigs at the same time switch over?
Well, a lot of people do that. We've always flying by the seat of our pants. We have up until now had a floating MacBook, which has Ableton loaded on it, main stage, and all our sets on it. So if anyone in the band, either Johnny with his electric drum kit or me with my rig or Howard, if the computer went down, we could just wheel in this spare and it would be available for anyone to use. We've never had to wheel in a spare. Yeah, I'm so confident in it now, really. And we also have a stage piano set up for Howard, so that if there's ever an absolute disaster, he can just go and sit at the stage piano and entertain. I mean, he's on a big sellout acoustic tour at the moment, so he's, you know, we're never stuck. We're never stuck by technology that we would, you know, it would totally screw up everything.
Could a single main stage computer run the whole show? I mean, could you just have it for everybody?
That's what
I mean, the rig that we sped up for Tom Bailey, he had one computer with main stage, and all the keyboard players were piped into the one computer. And they've been touring happily with that for the last 3 years. You can even run multi-tracks of audio there now as well. So if you need to run backing, you know, sequences or percussion, you can run multiple stems within a main stage patch as well. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it's very capable.
Interesting. Are you using Motu audio interfaces for that to feed out? Is that the way
We've always used the Motus. I'm currently in a little bit of a. I'm desperately trying to find. So again, if anyone's got any ideas in this, it'd be much appreciated. Because of the way we're building Howard's new rig, he's got the Arturia Keylab ATA as his controller, and then we have a section behind in the case we've got built with acrylic and. The LED tubes to light them up. But in that bit behind the keyboard is where we have to also put all the other stuff that the rig needs, like USB hubs or whatever. And I'm desperately trying to find the smallest possible audio interface that's got two stereo pairs on it, because the size of that audio interface dictates how big a big section we have to have on the back of this rig. And I'm not finding anything that seems to be kind of modestly sized. So it's just got to have two stereo pairs. That's all it's got to have.
Just so outputs, right, okay.
Two pairs of outputs. Yeah, anyone got any ideas, be much appreciated.
Okay. So, Rich, when you're going, you know, your plan with this is what, to play solo gigs? And so are you going to be playing anything that's machine-driven as well? Or is it just going to be what you can do with your hands and that's it?
Initially, it's hands, but and I don't know about solo gigs. I don't know exactly where it's going to go. It's going to start out with me and my son James playing music downstairs once I have enough interesting stuff prepared that I can go down there and play invent a variety of things. And I'm going to record what we do and try to see where it leads. So I don't know. It's I'm keeping it deliberately vague in my own mind because I don't want to constrain it according to anything commercially derived. And it's not to say that there's anything wrong with that either, but just I'm not quite sure what the role is for this instrument,
right.
But I know it's got one in my life and I want it to evolve out of some sort of fairly, for want of a better word, organic process that comes out of the way I play, and who better to do that with and create more space and time with than my son, who also could stand to be playing more. So that's how it starts.
Right.
And I don't necessarily want to shove it down any particular lane or avenue. Right. I want to kind of see where it goes from there. And it's purely an artistic endeavor on my part, and it has absolutely no specific goals for, you know, market success or anything like that. I just want to play music that's fun and interesting, and I want to see if I can develop some.
I think that's a very good sentiment. Robbie, I don't know if you've seen in the chat room, people are saying the iConnectivity 4 Plus.
That was the one I'd come to think about most. I've got to check out the dimensions of it, but yeah, that seems to be the one that I'm gravitating to. So that sounds like it might be worth checking
out. What a great chat room we've got.
Yeah. Awesome. Good work, chat room. YouTube
and
the IRC. Thank you very much, everybody.
I've got one thing I was going to say to you. I just sent you a picture, actually, on your email to show you. But I've got one of these 34-inch widescreen LG monitors, which I love. And I just got another one this week, and I've mounted them vertically in the studio, which I don't think is a normal thing to do, but it's just amazing.
Oh, yeah, baby.
It's amazing how much it's fantastic for doing film work. The weird thing is, when you see it turned off, it looks really imposing, like you wouldn't be able to take it in. But when you actually start working with it and you get your mixer fully open and you can have your range, it's amazing.
Is that all running off that MacBook Pro below there?
That's just my domestic. It's running off my, my trash can 12, 24 core.
Ah, yeah. Okay, got you.
Yeah. Nice.
But actually, the MacBook Air runs those two monitors flawlessly with loads of other stuff running.
Nice.
MacBook Air is a great computer. I know they're going to toss it, but it's a great computer.
It's a good computer.
Who knows what is next? Well, guys, it's been a really fascinating tour. I really appreciate it. We've kind of we've managed to go off-road and on-road and all over the place, which I'm very pleased about. And, Rich, I wish you every luck with your play. The chat room are gagging for you to play something, so you might have to play us out if that's something you feel comfortable with. Don't want to put you on the spot.
We'll figure something out. Sure.
Excellent. All right, well, that's it for this week. Thank you ever so much for watching. Thank you, everybody, on YouTube. It looks like the stream held up in the end, so we should have something for you, and I hope you'll be watching it fine. I want to say thank you very much to iZotope for providing the competition prize. In fact, we'll just throw that up again. If you want to win a copy of iZotope Neutron, you tweet the hashtag fixyourmix in one word and the hashtag Neutron to @SonicState and @IZotopeInc. That's the hashtag fixyourmix and the hashtag Neutron to @SonicState and @IZotopeInc, and then you will be entered to win the competition. So, Robbie, thank you very much for joining us. Been a pleasure to have you aboard as ever. I hope it's all worked out, because today we've been using, we've put an X32 that's driving all the audio, and I think it's worked out right. And to my ears, it definitely sounds better than what we had before. So
It does sound better.
Oh, that's good. Even over Skype, that must be something important. Well, thank you, Robbie, also. And also, thank you very much, Rich Hilton, for joining us. And we're going to put you on the spot to play something out. So that's it for this week. We'll see you next time. So here's the main stage. I'm going to go to the next slide.